upholding scientific research and discovery in respect, as we should, we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captive of a scientific, technological elite.
We've signed a climate convention on the importance of economic instruments and free markets. Were included in this mammoth Agenda 21 document and the Rio Declaration. Now, let me be clear on one fundamental point. The United States fully intends to be the world's preeminent leader in protecting the global environment.
Coming up, Technocracy News. Greetings, Patrick Wood here for Technocracy News and Trends. Today is April 24th, 2019. We'll start out the broadcast today with a story about the Fourth Amendment. The title of the article is Police State Trashing the Fourth Amendment. The next time you get stopped by a patrol car, a police blood draw van might roll up behind you and demand to take your blood. And you could be strip searched as well. Any and all personal data harvested from the incident becomes the property of the federal government, whether you did anything wrong or not. And of course, the charges or the stop could cascade. You may have been stopped for maybe just a broken taillight, but things could quickly go out of hand. The Fourth Amendment states, quote, "The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrant shall issue, but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized." The Fourth Amendment is becoming a fleeting memory in America as more and more invasion of privacy is considered routine without regard, really, to the Constitution. And I dare say that even though almost every public servant takes an oath of office to uphold and defend the Constitution, most of them have probably not read it at all. They don't know what they're affirming to. This article is written by my friend at Rutherford Institute, John Whitehead, a longtime attorney and national analyst on legal issues, author as well. The article presents a very grim reality of life in the American police state. And it's certainly not the routine for every police interaction to go bad, but increasingly too many are. And police departments are exhibiting a complete ignorance of the Fourth Amendment. So there's a multitude of stories and examples in this article that point out where things went bad. 69-year-old Gerald Dixon was handcuffed and taken into custody, although not arrested or charged with any crime, after giving a ride to a neighbor's son whom police suspected of being a drug dealer. Despite Dixon's insistence that the bulge under his shirt was a result of a botched hernia surgery, police ordered Dixon to strip off his clothes, bend over, and expose all of his private parts. No drugs or contraband were found. A North Carolina public school allegedly strip-searched a 10-year-old boy in search of a $20 bill lost by another student, despite the fact that the boy twice told officials he did not have the missing money. The assistant principal reportedly ordered the fifth grader to disrobe down to his underwear and subjected him to an aggressive strip search that included rimming the edge of his underwear. The missing money was later found in the school cafeteria. Examples of minor infractions which have resulted in strip searches include individuals' arrest for driving with a noisy muffler, driving with an inoperable headlight, failing to use a turn signal, riding a bicycle without an audible bell, making improper left turn, engaging in anti-war demonstration. In that case, the individual searched was a nun, a sister of divine providence for 50 years. Police have also carried out strip searches for passing a bad check, dog lease violations, filing a false police report, failing to produce a driver's license after making an illegal left turn, having outstanding parking tickets, and public intoxication. A failure to pay child support can also result in a strip search. And he says, as technology advances, these searches are becoming more invasive on a cellular level as well. The secondary article I put below this was from a different source. The title of the article is, Police Are Now Taking Roadside Blood Samples to Catch Impaired Drivers. This is happening more frequently as well. Police departments are arming up around the country with new types of vans that are able to draw your blood on site, where you, in other words, where the stop took place. And you say, well, there has to be a search warrant, doesn't there? Well, yes, of course. If they can do it without a search warrant, if you just voluntarily agree to it, then no, you don't need it. They won't get a search warrant. But today, search warrants can now be secured electronically. E-warrants, they're called. Judges are on call 24/7. So if a policeman makes a stop in the middle of the night, for instance, and the policeman asks you to do something that would invade your privacy, and you say, no, I will not do that, the policeman can submit an e-warrant request to a judge who, for instance, can be woken up in the middle of the night with a ding on his smartphone, and he can simply hit a button and approve the e-warrant, at which time, then, of course, you will be subjected to the blood draw or whatever it is they want. The second article concludes, there's an absolute potential for a dilution of a citizen's constitutional protections against unreasonable search and seizure when it's done that way, said Donald Ramsell, a Wheaton, Illinois DUI attorney and Illinois Association of Criminal Justice Lawyers board member. A judge can just wake up in his bedroom and hit accept on his device and go back to sleep. Completely circumvents the spirit of the Fourth Amendment. And this is increasing around the country, quickly becoming mainstream rather than the exception. The second story today is kind of humorous in a way. The New York Metropolitan Transportation Authority, the NYMTA, has installed no fewer than 4,500 cameras in the New York subway system. And now, where tickets are bought at Times Square, there's monitors that appear up in the very visible part of the terminal where passengers are on screen with little yellow boxes framing their faces and a big red message in bold type at the top of the screen says recording in process. The thing is, anybody looking up and glancing at this picture is going to immediately assume, recording in progress. And there's my face with a yellow box around it. I guess I'm busted. Well, the idea is that the NYMTA wants to catch people who are trying to evade the fares. And they figure that this is a way to guilt somebody or scare them into not even trying to evade paying the fare. Just pay the fare. But some alert users challenged the authority and said, where's this information going? What's happening to it? And they vehemently denied that they're using facial recognition software. No, they said it's only just to scare those people who are trying to evade the fare. Why we wouldn't use facial recognition software, even though all the faces are framed, like when you look through a digital camera these days, it recognizes the faces immediately. And never mind the fact that it says recording in progress at the top of the screen. No, we're not using facial recognition software. And then, of course, when you actually get on the subway train, one of the 4,500 cameras installed will be tracking you during your entire journey. Well, I suppose time will tell whether or not they're telling the truth. But it is questionable these days. The more somebody denies something, it seems like the more certainly they are guilty of whatever it is they're doing. So we'll see. The third article and the main article of focus today concerns our food supply. This is such a very serious topic because we already know that the global food supply is controlled by a very small number of giant corporations. We dealt with this in an earlier article on Technocracy News and Trends. There's basically six companies now that control the world's food supply, and it's getting worse. But in the meantime, scientists and genetic engineers are running amok, creating new genetically modified foods, fruits, grains, vegetables, you name it. Virtually anything you buy in a grocery store and put in your mouth, scientists are now literally playing God by creating GMO food in the laboratory. Oh, and that includes meat as well. And now, thanks to the FDA, this GMO food that's been edited using the latest techniques of the so-called CRISPR technology will be stocked in grocery shelves within 5 years. 5 years from now. That would be 2024. And the gold rush is on for these companies that are modifying these foods. And you say, well, what are they doing to these foods? Well, things like breeding mushrooms that don't brown, fruit that doesn't spoil, crops that are resistant to certain types of diseases, strawberries that are more red than other ones for cosmetic appeal. Any conceivable trait in a plant that can be changed by CRISPR technology, now is fair game. And the FDA has been convinced, thanks to big ag technocrats who lobby them incessantly, the FDA has been convinced that all of these foods are substantially equivalent to their natural counterparts. In other words, they say, well, we could have arrived at this product by natural selection, like they used to do 50 years ago, but now we can speed things up thanks to CRISPR technology. We just go in and flip the genes around, and this food has a new, or this crop has a new characteristic that everybody will like. But it'll be nutritious, just as nutritious, they say, as the food that wasn't modified, because all we did was just speed up the process. What might have taken years to accomplish with natural genetic selection, we can just kind of do it right away. This is playing God with the food system of the entire planet. Now, there's been no ethical discussion around any of this either. How many modifications are acceptable? Could we say that two different rounds of CRISPR modification would be enough? How many edits should we allow? Is there any way to test the implications of what's going to happen down the road when these particular modifications breed in the field with other crops? Well, nobody can answer these questions, of course, but right now, scientists have a wide open door to modify the food system as much as they want using CRISPR technology. And my guess is they will not stop at one, two, three, or four, or five modifications in particular, that the door will be wide open, even to create brand new foods that don't exist today. This is a Pandora's box that's been opened. And the technocrat mind is at work here, because that's the mind that says any problem has a scientific solution. Doesn't matter what the problem is. Your strawberries aren't red enough? We can fix that. Your blueberries aren't big enough? We can fix that. Your cereal doesn't stay crisp in the milk that long? We can fix that. When the United Nations created their Sustainable Development Goals, goal number one was end poverty in all its forms everywhere. That's number one goal. We know that's been a disaster. They have not ended poverty in all its forms everywhere. Not even close. Goal number two, listen to this, end hunger, achieve food security and improved nutrition, and promote sustainable agriculture. These technocrats that are pursuing CRISPR technology to modify food that people consume is fully in line with SDG goal number two. End hunger, achieve food security, and improve nutrition, and promote sustainable agriculture. Well, sustainable agriculture doesn't include you and me or the small family farmer around the country. Basically, it's looking to the giant corporate agricultural firms that are in league with the same people that do the genetic modification of food in the first place. And they have decided how to achieve food security, how to improve nutrition, certainly through genetic modification, and how to promote sustainable agriculture. Well, if this ends up as unsuccessful as goal number one, ending poverty in all its forms everywhere, then the world is in big trouble. Goal number three of the Sustainable Development Goals is ensure healthy lives and promote well-being for all at all ages. That's another one that we discussed yesterday. The state of the medical community right now, especially in America, where evidence-based medicine and electronic health records are replacing everything that normal doctors do, causing the doctors to flee the system because they just can't take it anymore. So we see these sustainable development goals working themselves out in society. Poverty's not ended. Food security and improved nutrition is scaring the daylights out of people now in light of CRISPR and genetic modification. And certainly, healthy lives have not been promoted, and the well-being for all is a dream. So the question remains, what can be done about GMO CRISPR-edited food that's coming down the pike. Well, certainly, one could launch a protest against the FDA. Good luck with that. They're pretty untouchable because most of the people in the leadership of the FDA have come through a revolving door from the big ag technocrats who are creating the system in the first place. They're not likely to listen. At the state level, every state has a Department of Agriculture that could be addressed. Probably that's not a crazy thing to do. In a local community, however, in a county and or in a city, resolutions can be passed that are binding on food companies to not introduce these foods in those communities. If the market demand is reduced, some of these changes will be deemed as unprofitable and they won't be pursued. I'm Patrick Wood for Technocracy News and Trends. Have a great day.